Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Brett Blumendahl on the show for the first time. Brett is a fishing guide on Lake Sakakawea out of Garrison, but he's actually from a different part of the Midwest. He's from over in Iowa, born and raised, and he went to college, and he had a career, like a corporate job for some years, and then all of a sudden now, you know, he's, 5-6 years into a full-time guiding career on Lake Sakakawea. So he's got an interesting story. We definitely get into that, and we kind of got to get to know that a little bit. There's be some inspiring elements in his story for sure. He's also makes some educational YouTube content on his days off when he's not guiding. And what we're talking about in the second half of this interview, we're talking about the fall fishing on Lake Sakakawea and just some of his recipe for success. And there's a lot of great stuff. There's a lot of great stuff here in this interview. My particular favorite towards the end when Brett talks about how he attacks a tough bite, describing, you know, what a tougher day in the fall might look like. And I think for many of us, our chances to fish in the fall are very limited. Even if we fish a lot any other time of year, for recreational amateur anglers like myself, when the fall comes around, it is that busy time. There's a reason the boat landings are more empty. There's a reason there's less participation out there. There's so many other things going on. Even for some of us that are maybe avid anglers to, put those days aside to go fishing. And so when you have less opportunities to go and you get out there and you realize that it might be a tougher day that day, how do you salvage that? How do you attack a tougher day when time is of the essence, or you just don't have endless amounts of time or days that you can just go back out tomorrow and find them? And Brett's got some great recommendations on how to attack a tough day and how to break down water and be efficient and still get those fish to bite and still get those catches, but you might just have to work a little harder for him. And how he does it, I think, is great stuff. So that being said, Brett Blumendahl, fishing guide and YouTuber, fall walleyes. Let's get to it. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. PK Lures offers a deadly lineup of fish and tackle for walleye anglers. If you like to rig live bait, check out their pre-rig spinner rigs. Everything they have is very unique action profiles and colors. I'm talking about the Dakota Disc or the Wobbler. If you like throwing glide baits, new in 2024, PK came out with the Ridge Glider. It's a shad profile glide bait with an oversized hook, awesome for leaning into big fish. Got a really cool blade accessory on the back for added flash. The action on this thing is so much fun. A must-have for anybody that wants to throw glide baits all summer long. Crankbaits, lipless crankbaits, they've got it all. This summer, if you want to set yourself apart and offer the fish something they've never seen before, check out what PK's got at pklure.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Use promo code JMO for 20% off all orders and free shipping for any orders over $75 online. For anybody that likes to enjoy the outdoor opportunities here in the state of North Dakota, I would recommend the North Dakota Outdoors Podcast, put together by the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. This podcast playlist features a variety of entertaining topics, but for anglers specifically, you're going to find episodes that feature biologists and other fisheries department employees that are going to highlight and detail the great fishing opportunities across the state. They also tackle all the hot seasonal topics and feature data and research. So if you're looking for another great source of information about the outdoor opportunities here in the state of North Dakota, check out the North Dakota Outdoors Podcast, put together by the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. A link to check it out is in the description. Brett, you and I have never met. Honestly, neither of us probably know particularly where this conversation is going to go, which is always a fun thing. But to start it off, to get to know you, let's start here, man, with who you are, where you're from, you know, your fishing story, even like your origin story. A lot of times I like to start these off with a new guest, especially somebody I don't know anything about, man. Where did this all start for you, man? Like, where did fishing start for you? Thinking back to, you know, childhood stories, even like where you're from, where it all began, man. Go ahead.
Yeah, sure. I'll do what I can. I grew up in Iowa, so I was Iowa born, and I got into fishing through my dad, and he got into fishing a little bit through his dad too. So it's kind of, there's a lot of father son fishing in our family, I guess. You know, my brother's into it a lot as well, but we grew up fishing my dad was always a big fan of going out to the Missouri River, you know, in South Dakota. So we started Platte, Chamberlain. Eventually he worked his way up to Oahe, and we went to Pier, spent a lot of trips in Pier. And that's kind of where my biggest memories of fishing were growing up, was at Lake Oahe. And then we kind of got out of fishing for a while. You know, I went to college and I was a finance and economics major, and I had some jobs in the investment world and finance and stuff for a number of years. And at some point we decided we need to get back into this fishing thing. It had been too long. So dad and I bought a boat together, and of course we went back out to Lake Oahe first, did a little bit of that, and we were going to go back to Oahe again. And it was supposed to be like 103, 104, 105 degrees every day. So I just checked the weather for North Dakota. I said, what do you think about just going a little bit further? So we went to Devil's Lake first, had a great time at Devil's Lake. And I was like, well, now that I've tried Devil's Lake, I have to try Sakakawea because I love the Missouri River. So we did Sakakawea next and absolutely had a blast that time. And I couldn't stop coming. So in terms of starting fishing, that's kind of how that started. And then in terms of guiding, it got to a point where I realized, you know, I was an investment guy that was spending all my free time and money trying to fish. I was like, maybe I just flip this around and try to make a living fishing, because that's really what I want to be doing all the time. And Sakakawea was where I wanted to do it. It felt comfortable because it was the Missouri River Reservoir system, and met some great people up here. Still have a lot of great, you know, cohorts, some other guides and stuff, some really good friends that have taught me a lot and helped me network up here. And it's just been a great fit for me.
A lot of people can relate to, you know, the father, son, or getting into fishing or whatever, like on a hobby level. But mm-hmm. Where along the line did you feel like you had the confidence, or, you know, what would be some of those experiences that made you feel like, you know, you had that confidence that you could actually, you know, visualize an actual jump into the industry as a guide? Because that's like, I mean, you made it sound simple there, like, you know, anybody that has a passion for fishing and that has fished, you know, for 10 years and family trips can like do it, which, to, you know, some people are built that way. I'm curious for you, how would you describe that? Like, how did you sort of, you know, sort of self-evaluate yourself at that time when you were going to make the jump? Like what was it about yourself, your strengths, your weaknesses, you know, just your fishing style? Like, what was it about yourself that made you feel like making a jump like that was doable?
Yeah, it's like, the way it kind of started was, you know, as social media kind of became popular, obviously we started posting pictures of our fishing trips, and then people started asking us, can we go with you? And my dad was kind of dabbling with the idea of maybe he would do some guiding as a retirement gig someday. And then my brother got to be a big fan of like the Boundary Waters and stuff, and he was thinking about being a fishing guide, more of like a, you know, backwoods, haul the canoe out, portage, that kind of guiding. But nevertheless, they were both kind of talking about the idea, and I didn't really think a whole lot of it at the time. And then it finally got to a point where I was like, I was just very unhappy with what I was doing in corporate life. So I was like, well, if they think that they can do it, you know, maybe I can do this. And to be totally honest with you, I don't think I was ready fishing wise. I think I was ready to make the jump. I think I knew what I needed to do and what I wanted to do, but I learned some hard lessons the first 2 years on the water, especially when I started seeing what other guides were doing and when I started fishing with other guides. And one of the big keys for me was meeting the people that I did and getting to fish with people who are really good and have fished this lake for 30 years. There's several of them that I still network with, but there was one in particular that's been a pretty big mentor of mine. His name's Kent Yancey. He fishes he's from Bismarck. He's got Big Muddy Guide Service. I think he's potentially one of the best walleye fishermen in the state of North Dakota, if not more than that, in my opinion. And I learned so much from him the first year that we fished together, you know, 4 or 5 times in the boat. I made a lot of strides after seeing what was possible from this lake, I think, because initially, you know, I thought I had a pretty good day and that I would see what somebody like him or one of the other guides would do. And I was like, oh, like, that's what I'm looking for. Like, that's what this lake can produce. And now I need to strive to look for that, you know? So how did I get, like, I thought I was ready. I wasn't ready, but you know, one of the things that I tell a lot of people is there's definitely better fishermen than me And there's definitely better fishermen than me on this lake. But two things that I'm really good at are learning and teaching. So I think both of those, you know, play really well into being a guide, but also, you know, doing the YouTube videos, which I've learned to love to do as well. So that part didn't take as long for me. If I know something, I feel very confident teaching it. So that's where I had a lot of confidence in guiding.
How long have you been guiding before we get into the YouTube stuff? How long have you been guiding now?
This is my fifth year.
Yep. Fifth year. Okay. And do you live here now?
I live here during the fishing season. So I still have a house back in Iowa. I'm here for about 6 months and back there for about six. Yep.
Gotcha. And it's mostly, is it all open water? Mostly open water?
Yeah. I started dabbling in ice fishing. My brother really pushed me to get into it like 3 years ago. So I do enjoy it. I've done ice fishing videos for YouTube, but I have no plans to do ice guiding anytime soon.
Right on. Yeah. But the open water stuff is, yeah. Yeah, man. And so tell me, let's get into the YouTube stuff. How did that sort of become a thing? Because you're already going through some big changes. Was that like part of the idea from the get-go? And what sort of experience did you have in that? Like how did that materialize in this whole, you know, shift you had in life of going to corporate, being a career professional guy with a 401k to all of a sudden now you're, you know, entering your fifth year as a fishing guide in Lake Sakakawea and you're from Iowa. Like this is, some of this stuff is kind of a stretch, man.
Yeah, it probably is. Probably was, I suppose. YouTube was not part of the plan to start with. I had done my first year of guiding, which was, honestly, it was kind of a half year. I did a few trips during PTO and then I left my job in August and stayed up at Sakakawea for the rest of the year. And one of my friends had told me that this fishing on YouTube thing had gotten kind of popular and he was watching Tom Boley and some of these other guys. He said, you should get some GoPros and start, you know, making videos. And I was like, I don't know anything about doing videos. Why would I do that? And he said, well, if nothing else, it'd be a good way to market your guide service. So that was kind of how it started. I was like, that makes some sense. You know, if I can at least make some videos and people can watch me catch fish, then they have faith in hiring me as a fishing guide.
Sure. Well,
after doing it for a year or two, I just realized I really liked it. Like there's a big part of my personality that's very creative. I like to have creative outlets. And that was definitely the thing that I found for me. And once I learned more about editing videos and how to put that together, instead of just filming a bunch of clips of catching fish and then learning how to talk in front of a camera and all that kind of stuff, then it kind of took on a life of its own. And then the next thing I knew, I had 1,000 subscribers. Like, oh my gosh, I can make money doing this. So I thought maybe that could be, you know, instead of having to get some kind of side job during the winter when I'm not guiding, this could fill the gap for me. So that's when I started to get really serious about it. Cause I was like, this is what I want to do. Like I can literally make a living fishing all year long if I can make this work. And I just love doing it. It's so much fun for me.
It sounds like you're almost as passionate or addicted to just, you know, that learning, that academic side as you are the fishing. It's like you having a challenge happening for yourself. Like you like striving for that something, you know, talking about your fishing style, you know, on Sakakawea, I kind of want to talk about you as an angler and maybe, you know, you'd fished a lot of places. You'd fished the Missouri River system and plenty other places. But there has to be some reasons why you landed on Sakakawea. When you made this jump in life, you made this big decision in life to get into the industry and start guiding and kind of, you know, get into this whole thing. You know, what was it about Sakakawea, or what was it about, you know, maybe yourself and how you like to fish, or like, how would you sort of describe, because I'm sure you've answered this question to a million people, like, why Sakakawea?
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously there was a comfort level thing, because that's just what I was used to visually seeing with my dad. You know, I was used to seeing cut banks, bluffs, that kind of stuff. But I think the other thing about it for me is when it comes to my fishing style, I'm not the type of person that would prefer to beat the same fish over the head with 80 different presentations. I would rather keep moving. I like to stick and move, and Sakakawea makes you cover water. So I think that does fit my style, but it also gives you the chance. Like when I started fishing it, you know, growing up, I was a bottom bouncer fisherman like my dad was. And that's mostly what I was comfortable doing, but I've gotten a lot more equipped with casting presentations, and that I really prefer, you know, I have to do what I have to do to guide. But if I'm making a video, like people ask, you know, at times, you know, how come you never troll in video as well? In part, I think it doesn't make for the most exciting video, but it's also not something I want to do. If it's my day off, I want to cast. I like the rod in my hand. And so you need to cover some water on Sakakawea, but you can also sit there and spot lock once you do move to those spots and catch them casting or vertical. So
you feel like, you feel like you're a power fisherman then versus finesse?
I would honestly consider myself an aggressive finesse fisherman. And what I mean by that is, like, I don't wait a long time for fish to bite, and I cover a lot of water. But once I do get to a spot, like, my favorite thing to do is finesse a jig and a minnow. I love jig and minnow pitching. I do a lot of jigging wrap fishing. That's some of my more popular videos on YouTube are about jigging wraps, which is power fishing for sure. But I'm more aggressive in terms of covering water and moving spots. And I feel like I have a pretty good feel for knowing when I need to slow down and finesse to get the bites, though.
Fall fishing for you, what does that really mean? What do you like about it? What are the good days? What are the tough days? I mean, where do we start with this, like, fall fishing for you in Sakakawea? And we can even talk, you know, more big picture, you know, say the last 5 years of your career, and then maybe later on get a little more specific on what it's been like this year. I definitely want to talk about those things. Sure. But just generally speaking, like, fall fishing, you know, if we can get into this time of year, what is that for you, man? What do you feel like on Sakakawea? What is the fall bite typically like for you?
Yeah, the biggest appeal to me of fall fishing is, first of all, big fish are more accessible. And I think, you know, from a guiding aspect, yeah, people like to get meat. People like to clean and eat fish. But I think the experience that drew me to Sakakawea was the opportunity to catch big fish. And I think that draws other people as well. So there's that. There's also the fact that hopefully, typically, you know, if it cools down before it starts to snow, fish start moving shallower again. You know, it gets a little cumbersome when you're fishing 40, 50 feet of water in September. And when they start coming back into 20 to 30 or even less, you know, some years we get into a 2 to 4 foot of water pitching bite, which is just phenomenal. And it's back to the casting game. You know, you can put the bottom bouncers away. You get some jigging rods, you get some jigging wrap rods. And even from a guiding aspect, like, there's some things you teach people when you're bottom bouncing, but there's a lot of stuff you teach people when you're pitching jigs. And that's when I get way into it. And when I find it to be the most enjoyable is when you can teach somebody who's never thrown a jig how to work it, how to feel that little tick bite, set the hook right away. That's what fall fishing is to me, is casting bigger fish, hopefully coming shallower if the water cools down fast enough.
Yeah, let's talk about that, like the fall pattern, the good days. I mean, I typically don't dwell on the good days because when it's easy, everybody could do it. I like typically picking out some of the tougher topics, and maybe we will. But from a pattern standpoint, what is the fall, when that shallower pattern starts happening, like, what does that look like for you, man? What are the signs?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, you have to get past late turnover, which, as a whole side topic, is a little tougher to identify a reservoir that has, you know, river water flowing through it. It's not quite as black and white or cut and dry, but let's assume you're past turnover. You know, when you start, I've never really had consistent fall bites above 55 degree water, and even 55 kind of feels like it's pushing it, you know, but when you're at 48 to 52, that's when I kind of feel like you're in the go zone. And you know, if you're on the way down and you start, like today, for example, 75 degrees, that did not help the bite a whole lot. You want the fish like the pattern to continue the way it's supposed to be going. So when the water temp is like a half degree cooler every single day you go out, it starts to develop a really strong pattern. In terms of spots, like my favorite fall spots are spots that you're a cast length away from 40 feet and a cast length away from 5. You know, so everybody always talks about that steep and deep. You want a steep cut, you want access to deep water for those fish. You know, if I'm catching them in 3 feet of water, at least on Sakakawea, it's probably a spot where the boat might be sitting in 30. I know, like, other lakes, natural lakes, don't necessarily have those spots. And, you know, if you're fishing Mille Lacs and Leech Lake, you could very well be catching them on sand flats and weed lines. You know, that's just flat for miles. But on Sakakawea anyway, I think they like that deep water access. So that's kind of the spots that I'm looking for. Temperature.
When you're breaking down these spots, you talk about covering water. That's part of your recipe for success. That's what you like to do. What does that really look like? Are you a side imaging guy for the first, you know, couple hours before you decide where to fish? Like, how much time do you spend on your electronics? How much time do you just pop in, make five casts, and move? Like, what does the moving and grooving look like for you?
Yeah, I guess so. One thing I should qualify that with is, you know, given the fact that I fish the Sakakawea a lot, obviously there's a lot of muscle memory involved, so I know spots where fish are likely to be. But let's say you don't, right? That's a good point with the electronics. So, like, the first thing that I want to, another thing I should say, like, when I feel like fall's coming, when you start to see those bait balls up a lot shallower, right? So we're in the summer, especially this year, we're very used to every time you pull up to a spot, as soon as you hit 50, 60 feet, that's where the bait is. The walleyes are usually sitting right inside of that, pushing that bait up shallower. When I start seeing that bait up in 30 feet, 25, 20, that's when I get really excited. So I'm looking for that. But another thing that you'll notice a lot, especially as you get towards late fall, you know, when the water gets real cold, is a lot of those fish can sit real tight to bottom to the point where they're just little bumps on your sonar, or maybe you don't see them at all. So sometimes you might just have to fish some of those spots, like you said, throw the five casts and see what happens. But also side imaging can become really effective. Like, I've had these arguments with some people before about whether or not, if you can't see a fish on 2D, can you see it on side imaging? I guess my view is you can, because you can see a rock and a rock sitting on the bottom. But maybe if the fish doesn't have as big a profile as that rock and sitting tight, you might not see them on side imaging either. So I've definitely had days, you know, in November when we're fishing out here, where it's like, geez, I've driven around to 7, 8, 9 spots. I know there should be fish and I haven't marked any anywhere. And then you just start fishing and you start catching them. So that's one time a year where sometimes your electronics get a little nullified and you might just have to trust it and try fishing it. So
you feel like that's like a cold water kind of a thing? Like when water's trending for sure. Cool. I mean, those fish, it's just sort of like inherently like part of their behavior. I feel like that's true. Like, that's just sort of my justification, because I've had, you know, that similar type experience, and I've heard a lot of other great anglers say similar things on other bodies of water that,
It also happens a lot if you get like cold fronts in summer. I'll notice those fish start to sit real tight.
And I mean, and then getting into those presentations, I like the way you describe, you're like a, you know, you're like a real aggressive finesse guy, you know, real finessey aggressive, you know, however you said that. Like, I like that. It sounds like there's, you know, you try to create that balance, you know, of being real bitey and or biteable. At the same time, though, you got to cover that water. When you're covering the water, you're leveraging your electronics the best you can. But again, you know, we can't spend all day on our electronics. Eventually, we got to make a cast. Right. You know, talk to me about sort of your starting lineup of your casting presentations. That's what you like to do. That's what I want to talk about. You know, your starting lineup and just sort of how that goes for you.
Yeah. So, like, obviously the dream is you pull into a spot and you're marking hundreds of fish right underneath the boat. You just spot lock and sit there and pick them off. But, you know, when that doesn't happen, another part of what I consider covering water is, you know, if you've graphed a spot that you've determined there's some activity here, I'm curious, I want to see what's going on. I don't necessarily just like to spot lock and cast. I like to keep the boat trolling. So I think that's another, you know, you can troll and cast. A lot of people think it's either spot locked or anchored, or you're trolling live bait rigs or crankbaits. But I prefer to stay on the move while I'm casting, you know, cast ahead of the boat at a 45 degree angle, work it back, whether it's a jigging wrap or a jig and a minnow. But, you know, also not only to cover water in terms of finding more fish, but just like, you know, not every fish bites. So if you had a great day and, you know, 80% of the fish are biting, then great, you don't have to do that. But sometimes you get like 1 out of 30 to actually pull the trigger, right? So I like to stay moving through fish and keep picking off those active ones. So that's another where it's like, it's aggressive because you're moving and you're covering water, but at the same time I'm throwing an 1/8 ounce jig and finessing a minnow down there when I'm doing it, you know. So and that's when it comes to guiding, though. Then I kind of flip it around backwards, because first of all, they got to get the hang of how this jig pitching thing works. So we're just going to try to find as many fish as we can, spot lock, and try to practice. And I'm like, okay, you feel comfortable with that? what do you think if I'm going to start moving the boat while you're doing it? Now think about, you know, where does your cast have to be? How do the physics work? You know, you can't cast straight behind the boat because now it's just going to drag behind the boat unless we're dragging jigs. So you got to think now, cast out to the side, cast a little bit ahead and keep working it. That's, you always have to kind of read a client and try to figure out when they feel comfortable and confident in what they're doing and whether or not you can progress. And some people just can't get the hang of the trolling and casting thing. And if that's the case, then I might try to look for a different spot. I'm going to try to look for a real tiny rock pile hump, tip of a point where they're stacked and we can just sit on them and pick them off. So sometimes my spots are determined by, you know, what I feel like the client is confident in doing.
Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. PK Lures offers a deadly lineup of fish and tackle for walleye anglers. If you like to rig live bait, check out their pre-rig spinner rigs. Everything they have is very unique action profiles and colors. I'm talking about the Dakota Disc or the Wobbler. If you like throwing glide baits, new in 2024, PK came out with the Ridge Glider. It's a shad profile glide bait with an oversized hook. Awesome for leaning into big fish. Got a really cool blade accessory on the back for added flash. The action on this thing is so much fun. A must have for anybody that wants to throw glide baits all summer long. Crankbaits, lipless crankbaits, they've got it all. This summer, if you want to set yourself apart and offer the fish something they've never seen before, check out what PK's got at pklure.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Use promo code JMO for 20% off all orders and free shipping for any orders over $75 online. For anybody that likes to enjoy the outdoor opportunities here in the state of North Dakota, I would recommend the North Dakota Outdoors Podcast, put together by the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. This podcast playlist features a variety of entertaining topics, but for anglers specifically, you're going to find episodes that feature biologists and other fisheries department employees that are going to highlight and detail the great fishing opportunities across the state. They also tackle all the hot seasonal topics and feature data and research. So if you're looking for another great source of information about the outdoor opportunities here in the state of North Dakota, check out the North Dakota Outdoors Podcast put together by the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. A link to check it out is in the description. What seems to be, are you real specialized? Do you have like some real strong preferences in your setup? Like even just like your personal setup, as well as, you know, just the setups that you're handing over to your clients as far as castability, like with your line preferences, rod preferences, action, length, you know, talking about your jig, like all that stuff can be a factor. And I find that, you know, with jig anglers, you know, everybody's got, you know, little preferences, situational usually, depending upon where they're at. For you, are you a more utilitarian? You just like the whole 10-pound test, 10-pound leader or whatever? Or do you have some strong preferences?
Yeah, I have strong preferences, but I also don't change stuff a whole lot. So I basically have two setups. If I'm live bait jigging, it's 10-pound high vis power pro braid or any kind of high vis braid, whatever the brand is, because I want people to feel the bite. So some days mono might catch more fish or get more bites, but if they can't feel it, it doesn't matter. So it's usually the braid with, you know, an 8-pound fluorocarbon leader for live bait. And then if it's a jigging wrap, I put heavier 14-pound, mostly because then you won't get as much line twist on that jigging wrap. But I got a fast action rod. I'm going to do everything I can to make sure they feel stuff, because the more they feel, the more feedback they get. If they don't have any feedback and they can't feel things, that's when they get frustrated, right? So I kind of just stick to that program. There are some days where every once in a while I wonder, like, gee, I wonder what would have happened if I just had a mono rod spooled up with that jiggy wrap or that jig. I don't know, but I also feel like you can't throw too much at a client. If you keep switching things around, they need to get used to what they're doing. And that's a lot to accomplish in one day, especially for somebody that hasn't done that before. So the more times you change things on them, the harder it's going to be. So even if I get the feeling after a couple hours, it might not be the best way to catch the fish, but I think we can get some. I want them to keep doing something that they've been working on already and not, I don't want to clutter their mind, I guess.
Yeah, that confidence. It's like sometimes even if it's the wrong thing, which that's probably the wrong verbiage, but that's just how we say it. It's like something might be better, but if I don't have confidence in that thing, I ain't gonna fish right. it ain't going to go right. If you can capture just like a little bit of confidence because they've been fishing for the last 2 hours with this, the first setup, they might just barely be getting a feel for it. I feel that in my bones, man, because I've done that to myself. You don't even have to be a client. You can just be somebody that consumes way too much YouTube and way too many podcasts and I have way too many great ideas from other people that I go out and buy way too much stuff, and I go out and I've got 9 different rods and I try to use them all in one day, and I get to the end of the day and man, I don't know if I moved the needle on with confidence in any of them, you know, it's like, And then when you do finally get on a good bite, which would be the time to try new things or, you know, gain confidence in something else. If you're a fishing guide, you don't change a thing when you're right. windmilling them, you don't change a thing. Just keep the net flinging. No, I love that, man. I love that.
Well, and like the other thing I would say is the number of times where there might be, say we got a big group and we got 3 or 4 of us guide boats out and we get back and we start comparing notes. And one of them will say, we got all of our fish on jigging wraps, couldn't get a bite on a jigging minnow. And then vice versa, the other boat's like, we couldn't get a jigging wrap bite, we got all our fish on jigs and minnows. We're fishing the same areas, the same spots, the same fish. So
getting more specific, like what have you been seeing this year? You know, you've been guiding the last couple of weeks. You probably, you know, you make content, you film videos on your days off, you're fishing a lot. Like that's why we're talking. What have you been seeing for this particular fall bite on Sakakawea?
Yeah, that's a great question. I've just been waiting for us to get in the meat of it because it just hasn't been cold enough. So it, to me, it still feels like almost a late September bite to some extent. We are finally this, you know, the last week or so, we're seeing some fish move a little shallow. We're seeing them get a little snappier. But also like this year and last year, both we've been kind of in this situation where, you know, fish always go deeper as the year progresses. I get that, but they seem to have gone absurdly deep the last couple of years. And like last year made sense to me because it got so hot so quick and the water warmed up so much. And this year it took a long time to warm up. It took forever to get that post spawn bite really going. And then it did warm up some, but then like August was cold. You know, I didn't expect the fall bite to take as long to develop. I didn't expect fish to still be in 40 to 50 feet of water like they were a week or two ago. So that's been kind of weird to me. But a lot of it still has to do with water temps and wherever we were coming from. The fact is it's not as cold as I want it to be right now. Yep. So it's been very, we've had to work for them a lot so far, and they're just not as aggressive as I like. There'll be one of those days where all of a sudden you go out there and the first cast you pop the fish, and then the next cast you pop a fish, and all of a sudden you're like, oh my gosh, this is a different day. And we've had a couple of those days where I thought this might be the start of it, and then it turned out it was just a really great day in the middle of decent fall fishing. So it's been kind of inconsistent. It's had fits and starts, and every time it warms up a little bit, it kind of goes back the other direction.
I'm definitely curious about some of those tougher days. I mean, because you're a fishing guide, you don't get to choose. You do not get to choose. You got to go. I mean, other than, you know, lightning and rain or whatever, that's not what we're dealing with. You're a fishing guide. People pay you. You got to go out there and you got to find them. You got to figure something out each and every day. When it's not set up like a perfect, when it's just hot and calm, like today, like hot and calm, and it's October, it's like, you know, we're definitely in the second half of October here. You know, it's not the ideal like fall bitey day for that part of the lake anyways. Like, what do you feel like, you know, is, you know, what do you feel like gets you the success on the day? I mean, what do you feel like you got to do? What are some of those adjustments that maybe get you some bites, you know, just maybe get you some key bites to salvage a day when it's less than ideal?
Yeah, that's really fresh in my mind because we had one of those days today and I just got back from doing that. Basically, the first thing that I was trying to do was I got to a spot where I was seeing fish. I was seeing them in 20 feet and I was seeing them in 40 feet. And we were within a cast length of both. So we had jigs and minnows going out, and then we had some finishers and some jigging wraps going out. So I'm trying to collect as much data as I can on that first spot. Do we catch a fish in 20, 30, 40 feet? What's the best depth? Do we catch them on the live bait? Do we catch them on the jigging wraps? as that kind of developed, we eventually got two that were really finessey with jigs and minnows. So I'm like, okay, if it's going to be a little bit of a grind, let's stick with the one thing that's working pretty well. So back to the confidence thing, let's try to not overcomplicate this. Let's keep it simple. We're just going to throw minnows. And then from that point forward, you kind of start deducing, like, the way I look at it is like, it becomes a probability thing. When the conditions are perfect, almost any fish will bite if you get it in front of their face. When it's not, you just have to move through that many more fish. So I started thinking in the back of my head, we're going to have to hit a lot of spots to get a limit of fish. And sometimes that means literally you get one fish per spot. So I don't know how many times today we pulled up to a spot and literally caught a fish the first cast and then nothing the next 15 minutes. So I set a timer in my head. I'm like, if we can get a bite on the first cast, but we can't get one in the next 10 minutes, it's time to move. So I try to be, I try to really watch that clock and determine what are our chances of getting another one. And especially when it's warm and it's flat calm, I just don't think there's a lot of spots that you can grind out fish. There's just not enough active ones. So it became a matter of trying to find spots that look similar to that one and being ready to move. Because it's kind of a weird, like, you would think those are the days you need to be more patient. But yet again, like, usually the fish or two that we caught on that spot was the first cast or two. So, like, again, the fish that want to eat are still eating right away. It's just a matter of there's fewer of them that are wanting to eat or at least bite, you know, a lure as opposed to eating the billions of smelt we have in that way.
Yeah. Sometimes the graph literally, like, reads the bottom when you're going over some of these schools. Yeah, man. No, like, I think that stuff is so juicy because for somebody like me, you know, when I pull up to a spot and I make five casts, or, you know, I pull up to a spot and I'm fairly confident that side imaging showed something, you know, a school of fish. Mm-hmm. And I can put a waypoint on those fish and I go back and I hit spot lock. I do all the things that, you know, it looks like on television, you know, and I make that cast, and the first 3 to 5 casts, I just get lit up.
Yep.
Like, I automatically am just so involved in that spot that 2 hours goes by in the blink of an eye.
Yep.
Like, that is time management is such a massive Achilles heel, even for me, like, on a weekly basis, talking to guys like you, guys that do this for a living, that tell you, you got to move and groove. And then I go out there and I completely fail at the time management deal. But I think that is absolute juice when it's tough. Like you said, you can so easily talk yourself into grinding out a spot that gave you one bite, that gave you that one fish, and you might get back on the console and drive over again and be like, man, those fish are still there.
Yeah.
You know, and you're just waiting for a bite window. I mean, is that something for you? Like, do you feel like, you know, you fish all day, you get out there in the morning, like, do you feel like the bite windows have been a factor this year at all?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's the other thing I was going to say is, so one, I'm guilty of what you just said as well. And it helps me sometimes if I'm guiding, because I do this thing where, you know, if we're catching fish, and then it gets slow, I say, okay, 10 more minutes. If somebody gets a bite, it's a 10-minute extension, or maybe it's 5 minutes that day, and, like, announcing it to them gets them involved, and then they'll kind of hold me to it.
Yeah.
But what I will do, though, is if we pulled into that spot and we didn't just catch one, but we lit them up for 30 minutes and then it quit, I will come back there in 2 hours. Absolutely. I recycle spots a ton.
We can always come back to a spot.
Yep.
You got to remind yourself of that, and that, but treat it properly, you know, like, don't, you know, have that one fish catch and then literally leave for 20 minutes and come back. But yeah, like, you know, it's, I think that's a huge thing. You know, we talk about it other times a year, but I think a lot of these fall bite conversations, I'm guilty of it, whatever, like, you know, these fall bite conversations, we're trying to promote it so much. The industry's trying to promote just a little bit more fishing in the fall. Everybody get out. And we talk about the glamorous stuff that it's big fish country, or time of year. You know, it's, you know, you know, the recreational boaters are gone, you know, it's empty boat landings and, you know, all the great stuff, you know, the stuff that gets you fired up about fall fishing. But having those, those reality checks, and no better than a fishing guide, you know, somebody that's literally out there every single day. You see the good. We've talked about it, but I think these are big, that those are big key components to learning and getting better just as anglers. And then, you know, it translates any day you're fishing, any time of year. It's not a time of year conversation, but I feel like, you know, hearing you talk about it in fall fishing is definitely can be an eye opener, because some, a lot of times, you know, people don't have endless time in the fall. There's a reason the boat landings are empty. Other things are happening. There's a reason, and good reasons. It's not like, it's not like everybody's just fair weather wimp that doesn't go out. I mean, it's life. It's reality. People are back to school. Yep. You know, it's like, it's, you know, fall. There's a reason fall fishing isn't for everybody, but for people that do get fired up and excited and they keep the boat in the driveway for an extra month or whatever, and they do take that one Saturday in October to go out, and it's kind of a new thing. It's kind of exotic, even if it's your home body of water that you fish all spring and summer, but you've never fished in October on Sakakawea or anywhere. Like you said, if you're Mille Lacs, if you're Leech Lake, if you're Oahe, if you're, you know, a pothole, you know, Glacial Lake Society, like anywhere you are, if you've never fished in the fall and you have a home body of water and you go out there in October, it's like being on a destination to fish. It is, because you're wearing clothes you don't normally wear. It's fall. You're wearing a jacket. You know, it's you know, the spots can look different if the weeds are dying out and watercolor's different, and you know, and the fish, everything we're talking about, like, it's not the exact same as summer for some good reasons and other things that you kind of got to learn about. And and so I love talking about it, but I definitely think that, I mean, personally, I appreciate the conversation about the things a guy's got to do on a tougher bite, and so often with other things. And, you know, when you're talking summer bites and you're talking bite windows, it's like, some, you really got to put your head down, and sometimes you got to grind out a spot. Sometimes you got to have lighter jigs. It's all finesse, 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 downsize this, downsize that, whatever, like grinding out these spots, be there when they bite. But sometimes on a tougher bite, you know, for you, your experience is cycle through the spots, make it a numbers game, do the math right, and make it a numbers thing. And like, for me personally, light bulbs are going off. And, you know, I think a lot of people would agree, like, that's the next thing to try. That's the thing that we haven't been doing good. That time management piece, that can be just a huge, so if one person takes that away, I think that could be massive, you know, just for somebody's fishing experience and then getting that next level up for themselves. Well, what else do we got to talk about? We're really good on time here, man. Like, I love it. I literally have notes written down. Anything else that we should be talking about? Again, and in the intro, I'll definitely get people to your YouTube channel. Like, pretty much, you've got a pretty nice roster of videos for probably every single topic that we've tried to talk about today. There's so much great stuff on there. Anything about that we should promote? Anything that you've put out that you feel like is pretty cool so far this year? Anything that you got coming up that you're about to be launching on the content side of things?
I guess in terms of content, like, one of the things I tried to do a little more of this year, and I still like to do, like, I guess I call them either like fishing report type videos or like tips and techniques videos, but I did a little more I guess stuff that I think could be relevant anytime. Like, for one thing, I got my first forward facing sonar thing, which is, that's been a whole different, there's been a lot of discussions on that for different reasons, but I tried to make some videos that were a little more conceptual, I guess. Like, I did a video that was called Big Walleyes in a Brave New World, which is basically like the discussion of, is forward facing sonar ruining fishing, and is it making it too easy to catch big walleyes? And then I went out trying to catch big walleyes doing things I'd never done before. So it wasn't like a, it wasn't a seasonal thing. It wasn't a technique thing, but it was more of a, I don't know, like I said, a conceptual video or something that might spur some conversation. So that was something I kind of did a little more of this year. I think maybe videos that could reach a broader audience as opposed to people that are interested in walleye fishing or Lake Sakakawea in general. So that was video that I did this year. I really enjoyed that one. And yeah, the forward facing sonar, that was a, getting into that. And back to your point on time management, this might be a little bit of a tangent, but time management becomes extremely crucial forward-facing sonar because now, oh my God, you're sucked into that screen. You're looking at that same fish that hasn't been seven times you've thrown a bait at it. And next thing I know, it's, like you said, 20, 30, 40 minutes later, and I'm like, oh my God, we gotta get out of here. I got to remember some fish still don't bite. Whether I see them on forward-facing sonar or 2D, it doesn't matter. I need to move.
Oh, yeah, dude. I've been having those conversations on here for years, you know, when all the guys on the tournament scene, everybody that's using it, it's like, oh yeah, we're casting at individual fish. We're catching individual fish, right? That was one of the first things that was such a big deal about forward sonar a couple years back. Like, man, these guys are just, you know, going out on a big reservoir and they're just finding the individual big ones and casting at them. You know, it's like, that gives you, if you're not into it, that gives you this image in your head that like, they go find five big ones and catch all five big ones. Correct. And you go out and that does not happen. It's like, I go back and I'm like, hey guys, what in the world are you talking about? It's like, well, no, we found 300 of them and only five bit. Yeah. Well, jeepers, you know, like that wasn't part of the original dossier, you know? It's right. Like, totally, man. I think that's a super fun developing topic as well, for sure.
Like, that's one thing I've tried to do really hard with my YouTube channel too. Cause like, I watched a ton of fishing shows growing up as a kid. They were my favorite things to watch, but inevitably they would make it look so easy. And then I would go out to my local lake in Iowa somewhere and I can't catch fish. I'm like, what's going on? Like, I don't understand. I just thought I had to throw this Carolina rig and I was going to catch all these bass and lily pads. Right.
Yeah.
So I eventually learned that, like you said, like they didn't necessarily film that video in a day. They might've filmed it over the course of a week and they might've had a lot of things that they cut out that you don't see. And I didn't want my channel to be that. Like, some people have made comments like, I find it funny or crazy, or I'm glad that you show the fish that you didn't catch or the fish you lost or the days where it was a grind and a struggle. And like, I just want to be as real as possible. I want people to, like, obviously you have to cut some stuff out because you can't make it a 7-hour YouTube video. But I try to give them the feel for whatever the day was. If it was a tough day, I want them to feel like I was struggling, because that happens, you know? I don't want people to think, I don't want them to see the highlights. I want them to get a feel for the day. What's the story? What happened? How did it feel? Was I frustrated? Was I excited? Was I pumped? Did I learn something new? So that's what I like about, you know, YouTube kind of gives you the option of doing. I think YouTube's brought a lot of authenticity.
Yep.
Not for everybody, but it gives you the opportunity to. I think a lot of people are more into that now.
Yep.
And that's what we do.
Yep. 100%, man. Yeah, dude. Well, hopefully you're enjoying it and you keep doing what you're doing. I think it's cool. I definitely caught on to you here more recently and I really enjoy the videos, like, you know, all that educational stuff with the screenshots of the graph and the, you know, just showing and describing the way you're doing it. You know, and I definitely think you've got some of that teaching down. It's not the end all be all. Other people might do it differently, but this is how I do it, kind of a deal. I think that's super important because, you know, it allows people to kind of digest you a little bit better. Or if I have a little different takeaway personally, because of a recent outing, or there's just something on my mind, you might help me unlock the code unintentionally to something I got going on. I think people that try to ram certain stuff down your throat, it doesn't come across that good, but definitely just kind of take it or leave it. This is kind of how I do it. I think that's a great style. I totally appreciate your stuff, man. And I appreciate the time. I like the discussion. I like the, you know, talking about what it's like out there in Sakakawea for you. I think you got an interesting story. I mean, you probably understand that, but, you know, being from Iowa and traveling around to fish and making a move from the corporate world into a fish guiding career somewhere else is, you know, not a lot of people got a story just like that. So I think that's really, really cool, man. And, yeah, I'm glad we're able to do this. We'll definitely do it again because we'll definitely have a lot. I mean, Sakakawea is my favorite body of water. That's no secret. And so any conversations about Sakakawea, just get me super fired up. But yeah, man, I think it's a great showcase, a lot of great information, and not just highlighting the highlights, right? Not just talking about how great everything can be. Definitely talking about what it takes to be for you to be successful on a tougher day. And again, not just fishing for yourself when, you know, you can make things easier. You can do things a certain way. You're doing it, you know, with clients in the boat and all different experience levels and skill levels. And, you know, I think that your perspective is valuable to me for sure because of that, that experience. So I appreciate it, Brett. That being said, we've talked about your YouTube and social media stuff, but let's just name them here to sign this off. And where can people find you?
Yeah, YouTube-wise, it's Blumendahl Fishing. My website, if you want to book a guide trip, is blumendahlfishing.com. And then I got Blumendahl Guide Service is my Facebook page for my guide service. So that's what I do.
There it is, man. I'll put all that stuff in the intro too, so that people kind of have that teed up right off the bat.